The time is coming when we'll all be free to roam wherever we want to go. And you know how much I love my power pollen. I've got to get to Stuart to do me a Nature Bee power pollen jingle. Or if there's any musicians out there, have a crack. Send it in, nightshift@triplem.com.au. Make sure Jess sees it so I don't lose it. But if you can come up with a Nature Bee power pollen jingle, that'd be great. I love power pollen. Been taking it for 21 years, and all I say is give it a go. It does boost energy. It does help you get to sleep, and it boosts your immunity, and it increases vitality. So make the most of the upcoming freedom. Give it a go. $29.95 gets you on board. 3 months supply for $69.95 gets you the bonus two creamy honey pollen soaps. Now, independent immunologist, Dr. Jill Webster, loves pollen, loves Nature Bee. Well, not necessarily just Nature Bee, but she knows the importance of pollen to our system and how good it is for us. And I've spoken to her a few times. This is Dr. Jill, independent immunologist, talking about how good Nature Bee is for your immune system. Listen to this.
Really, our immune system, we've got to see it every day of our life. It's our frontline defense, our first warriors. And if we talk about COVID, it's a respiratory virus, so we know it goes into the respiratory tract, so through your nose, your mouth. So boosting your immune system in those compartments, and we call it mucosal immunity, is paramount. And so how do we keep that in tip-top condition? Literally goes back to our diet and back to all those required vitamins and especially antioxidants that keep those defense cells in tip-top condition.
Dr. Gillian Webster, who loves pollen, it is the ultimate in a vitamin supplement. It is completely natural. It is a food. And the Nature Bee power pollen is potentiated, which means they mill the husk of the pollen so your body can absorb it all. Give it a go. powerpollen.com.au. It comes with a money-back guarantee. I wouldn't endorse it if it didn't. If it doesn't do all the things I've said, just let Jeff Cook know, and he gives you your money back, I promise. powerpollen.com.au. G'day, Darren.
How are you, Luke?
Good, thank you, Darren.
Mate, look, I didn't ring up about taxis, but I know a fair bit about them because I own taxis in both New South Wales and Queensland at one stage.
Well, let's talk about it because I think rightfully so, there are a number of taxi licensees who lost their livelihood because there was an opposition rideshare operator who was operating illegally for a long time. And the government not only didn't shut them down, they said, oh, well, we can't beat you. You may as well join in. But the taxi industry, in my opinion, did need a kick in the ass. But the legitimate owners of these licenses that people paid up to $600,000 for, they didn't deserve to do their dough like this.
And let's not forget, Queensland State Government was auctioning taxi licenses right up to the day that Uber came onto the streetscape.
Yeah, so they were taking the money.
They were auctioning, 100, 200 licenses a year. Every time the population would grow, they would have an auction. And we're copping $20, $30, and $40 million a year by issuing new licenses. Mm-hmm. Now, that was in Queensland. In New South Wales, when you bought a taxi license, you didn't only just pay stamp duty, you paid a goodwill tax, which was the equivalent of stamp duty. So, every time a taxi license traded, the state government would put close to $30,000 in their pocket. Mm. Now, look, as the taxi owners have got no one to, they've got lots of people to blame, but the taxi industry is, the hierarchy of the industry from cab charge down, did not do anyone any favours. They were making so much money, they thought they were untouchable.
Yep.
They were paying, I won't say they were paying politicians.
No, don't say that. Retract that. You'll get me in trouble.
I'll retract that. But when you get a chance, go and have a look at the first episode of an ABC special called The Big Deal.
Mm-hmm.
And it deals with how in the last 10 years,
yep,
there has been $1 billion of undisclosed donations to both parties.
Mm. Now, that's another issue. And I would like to know if the taxi industry or if Uber had anything to do with that. But that is another issue which I've touched on this program. I don't believe there should be any undisclosed donations to any political party. And I think ICAC needs to look at this. In fact, I have a problem with political parties receiving donations and then not disclosing them, because how do we track what favours have been done for certain businesses or individuals who are donating large sums of money? They want, no one donates a lot of money to a political party without wanting something in return, correct?
Well, this is correct. I mean, like, when you look at it, about 25 to 30% is actually through donations, which appears on a register 18 months later, would you believe?
Mm.
Don't have to declare it for 18 months, but there is this big, huge amount of money that is given in the form of let's go to lunch,
mm-hmm.
and we'll pay you $100,000 to sit down with the applicable minister mm-hmm. at lunch.
That's right, and that happens all the time. Both, all parties do it. So they'll have a fundraiser where you can come and buy a seat at a dinner and you get to sit with a minister.
Well, without flogging the opposition, if you ever get a chance, go and have a look at the first episode of Big Deal. They've calculated that over 10 years, there's been nearly $1 billion go in both the coffers of both the Liberal and the Labor Party. Actually, they made the analogy that the American system is 50% better than the Australian system.
The Big Deal, I'll have another look at it. But I know it goes on, and it is a worry. You were in the taxi industry. You owned how many licences?
I had about five at one stage.
How much each did you pay for them?
Mainly country ones, but between $200,000 and $300,000 each. I saw the writing on the wall and got out. But I know of people who didn't. They've all got negative equity in their loans. I know a couple of people who have suicided. The compensation package is basically only going to pay cents in the dollar. We're talking. Mm. At very most, 7 or 8% of what their licences were worth.
Yeah. Well, you saw the writing and you got out, so you got your money.
Yeah, look, I did. But what I was actually ringing about, did you know in prison, in Victorian Parliament, there's three upper house parliamentarians who refuse to declare whether they're vaccinated or not, so can't sit in Parliament. But we'll still cop our $150,000 a year.
Yep, I am aware of that, and it's driving me cuckoo. So they don't want to declare the status of their vaccination, so they're not allowed to sit in the parliament, but they're still collecting their money.
That's right. Hmm. And we've got one of the most draconian pieces of legislation I think I can remember, and I've been a bit of a Dan fan, but what he's trying to put through now, I think, is a step too far.
Yeah, but if you don't know what Darren's talking about, there's legislation, hasn't gone through yet, but there's proposed legislation in Victoria that will give Daniel Andrews, already government of the day, but the government of the day, which is Daniel Andrews, unprecedented powers, the power to completely lock down the state again, even if there is not an increase in COVID cases.
Yeah, to the stage, it says if you belong to a particular group, we can not interrogate you, but we can take you along, we can have you tested, we can force medical treatment upon you. Now, I know it's aimed at the anti-vaxxers, but they could turn around next week and go, we don't like Melbourne Football Club supporters. We'll take all you in.
Yeah, that's highly unlikely, but I understand. I hope to maybe talk to Darren Hinch about that before the week is over. Listen, Darren, I've got to keep moving, buddy. Just let me ask you this about the taxi industry again, because you were in it and you owned a number of licences. And I don't know if this was the case in regional Australia where you had your licences, but certainly where I live, the taxi industry needed a kick in the ass. Would you agree?
I agree wholeheartedly. It didn't embrace technology. It was ran by old men who were making a lot of money. To the stage, it was almost like the mafia. You've only got to remember, you used to swipe your credit card in a taxi and you were charged a 10% premium over and above the fare, of which cab charge were taking 70% of it.
Really?
Yeah. And it, you know, it, that went on for, I'd hate to think how many decades. The ACCC challenged them eventually and got it brought back to, I think, 4%. Now, we tried to put FPOS machines in our own cars. Now, I had taxis in Brisbane as well. And we, part of your license condition was you had to belong to one of the major radio networks.
Right.
We were told if we continued with our own FPOS machines, we would be refused membership, keyword membership, which you had to pay for. You had no choice but to be a member, unless we removed our own FPOS machines, which we were only charging 1.2%, which was what our merchant fee was, and replace them with the cab charge machine where they could take their 10%.
Wow. So the taxi industry had it very good for a long time.
Look, there was, you know, a dozen people in there who became multi-millionaires and were accountable to no one.
Yeah. So a change needed to happen and the taxi industry didn't react quick enough. You certainly saw it coming and you got out with your money, but anyway, there you are. Hey, listen, thanks for your call. Please call back anytime.
Thanks, mate. You have a good night.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye now.
This is The Night Shift. The Night Shift on the Triple M Network.
Well, you might remember the other morning we were talking about migrants coming to Australia and wanting desperately to fit in, particularly after World War II. We took migrants from Greece and Italy and Yugoslavia and you name it. They wanted to come here and they wanted to become Australians. And it reminded me of the movie They're a Weird Mob. Actually, it was a book. John O'Grady, and the main character was a bloke called Nino Colletta, who came here. He was going to be a journalist, but that fell through. He became a builder's labourer, and an amusing story. It's a great book and a great movie about becoming an Australian, and it reminded me of an old mate of mine, Tony Bonner, who had a small part in that movie. But Tony, as you know, was Jerry the helicopter pilot in Skippy, which ran on Australian television. God, when was it? 1968 to 1970. And it had a sensational cast. Gary Pankhurst, we don't hear from anymore. Ken James played Mark Hammond. Tony, as I said, was Jerry King, but Lisa Goddard was in it. Ed Devereaux played Matt Hammond. And then we were talking about amusement parks. And I remember one episode of Skippy where Skippy was at Luna Park. And I said, I've got to get Tony Bonner on the phone and have a reminisce about some of this great stuff. He's on the phone now. Hello, my old mate.
Luke, good to hear your voice again, mate. And you've gone from the great 2GB over to the Triple M's.
I have indeed, mate. So, yeah, they said, come on over. You can talk about whatever you want, and you get to play Cultures of Led Zeppelin and the Foo Fighters. I said, where do I sign?
Perfect. Yeah, perfect.
Tony, it's great to hear your voice again, and I hope your ears weren't burning the other morning because you featured a fair bit in our conversations, and I promised my listeners I'd get you back on the air and catch up. How you been?
Great, yeah. It's been, I can't think the last time we had a chat, Luke. So I'm trying to fill in what I've been up to since then. But, yeah, no, it's all been good. Before the pandemic hit, I was filming a lot on productions in Queensland, teaching down in at various film academies in Melbourne and in Sydney here, trying to get a film up with some other producers. So, yeah, it was all great until about a little over a year ago when the pandemic hit, the borders closed, and our business went for a nosedive for a while.
Everybody's business. I mean, the musicians, the actors, yeah. the stagehands, the lighting people, the roadies. You know, we had JobKeeper, for so many people who were doing it tough, but no one thought about the actors and the musicians.
Yep, correct. You know, it's been really tough, as you correctly said, for the live theatre and the bands, the gigs, and the solo singers. They're all the ones that have really suffered. Anyone performing to an audience, obviously there were no audiences. So it's been a very interesting last year. But you know, you love the industry, Luke. You survive.
Well, let's talk about you. That I can tell you, I can give you a reminder that the last time we spoke was when you were, and rightly so, chasing some sort of royalties for Skippy.
That long ago. Okay.
Yeah, and I know that you took the producers or the people that put
the company.
You sued them because Skippy was a huge character in my childhood. Yeah. Skippy to me was an Australian kangaroo version of Flipper.
Yes.
And you played a vital part in that. My cousins absolutely had the hots for you. They had, if there was a poster of you in TV Week, they had it up on their wall in your khaki uniform and your red cap. My God. Yeah. And then we were talking about migrants coming to Australia and the movie They're a Weird Mob, and you were you had a small part in that as well.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, you were a surf lifesaver?
I was, yeah. It was the same producers, Luke. The way I was asked to play the character in Skippy was through the character I played in They're a Weird Mob. Both productions were the same producers, Fauna Productions.
Oh, God, because Ed Devereux was in There a Weird
Mob. Of course, and so was young Kenny James as a very young boy.
Oh.
So when we did Weird Mob in about 1964 or 5 for memory, and then I went back to theatre. I did some work down at the Phillip Street Theatre and then over at the Music Hall in Neutral Bay. And then suddenly friends of mine, producers, called me. Lee Robinson called me and said, "Son, we're going to do a television series. This is the format. There's a character there that we'd like you to think about playing." And that's how it all happened. I said to Lee, "What are you shooting it on, Lee?" He said, 16 mil color film. And to be an actor back in the 60s in Australia and to work on a daily basis on film, I just jumped at it. It was great. I mean, it taught me a lot that year that I did with the show before I went on to London. And did 4 or 5 films there and a lot of television there at Pinewood and Elstree. So, it was great. It was just great to work that year.
Because I was born and bred at Elanora Heights on Sydney's northern beaches, and just up the road and over the hill was Waratah National Park. We used to go there a fair bit, and I remember the big trampolines out the back. But did you have a lot of fun doing Skippy? I've got to be honest, I noticed a bit of sexual tension. I noticed that you just come on. Too much time has gone by. Tell me the truth. I noticed a bit of sexual tension between you and Lisa Goddard. And can I just say this? I was in love with her.
I'm sure you were.
Now, come on, tell me. I loved the bangs. She had bangs, folks. She had this beautiful fringe with the blonde pigtails. Tell me, and she was studying music at the conservatorium.
She was.
Now, tell me, was there anything happening there?
There was hand-holding, yeah.
I thought so. Just like I suspected, David Cassidy,
but that was kind of incestuous a little because that was his mother, wasn't it?
No, that was the Partridge. Brady Bunch was Gary Williams, Barry Barry Williams, and Florence Henderson. The Partridge Family was Laurie Singer and David Cassidy, who were brother and sister.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah. See,
correct.
God, I'm dragging this out of my ass.
Man.
it's up there with Jamie Redfern and Jane Scully, but let's not go there.
Let's not go there.
I was telling my listeners, we were talking about amusement parks that were around when we were kids, and some of them aren't there anymore. Magic Mountain was the one we were talking about. on the Gold Coast. And I remember.
On the Gold Coast. No, yeah, I remember it well.
Well, I remember Manly Fun Pier.
Yes, so do I. I was born and raised in Fairlight. I walked across the pool there and I swam there. We had the old Kookaburra speedboat that took off from that pool there. And I walked across there to get the ferry. I loved it.
Yeah, Manly Fun Pier. And Luna Park, which is still there, but it's gone through many changes. But one thing that hasn't changed is Coney Island. And I was telling my listeners of an episode of Skippy,
yep,
where Sonny takes Skippy to Luna Park. I think John Mellion was in the same episode.
The great Mellion, yep.
And Skippy's on a merry-go-round. Skippy's on the Ferris wheel. Skippy was on the roller coaster, and Skippy was on the joy wheel. and Skippy was sliding down the big slippery. How the hell did the RS... That would never be allowed to happen today. The poor terrified kangaroo went on every ride at Luna Park.
Yeah, but you're presupposing that it was the same fluffy little critter doing it all. As with Flipper, as with Fury, as with Lassie, there wasn't just one individual horse or dog or, you know, you got one of... animals, and you trained to do certain tricks, and then you got a lookalike to learn to do some other tricks, and you edited all the tricks together, and it looked like a very clever horse or dog or kangaroo.
No. My point, Tony, my point was when the kangaroo was sliding down that big slippery slide in Coney Island on the seagrass mat, the poor kangaroo gets airborne over the hump.
I'm sure we all did.
You can't do that to a kangaroo. Not these days.
Yeah. Well, he didn't complain.
He asked for more money.
You bet.
So what happened with you suing the producers of Skippy?
Oh, it was really, Luke, it came, that move came 30 or 40 years after we did the show. With so many people saying, hey, I just bought the boxed set of the Skippy television series. You must have made a few bob out of that. Oh, and I just bought an episode that said it was Tony Bonner's favorite episodes. You must have made something out of that. Oh, and I've got a little Jerry doll with the helicopter. You must have got... And I just got tired of hearing what I supposedly was making. And I just said to a friend of mine, a barrister, can we kind of talk to the company and see if they will be agreeable to maybe paying the actors a little piece of the merchandising? Yeah. And of course they didn't and didn't choose to. So we went the next step and they were selling my likeness on games and toys and
lunch boxes.
All that. And so we went to court. We didn't get a win, I've got to say, because we didn't go in with a monetary figure. We just went in there for the company to say, yeah, we're using you, your name, your likeness to sell product. We've been a bit naughty. So let's say this percent of our merchandising profits to not just you, Tone, but to the other actors as well. And we all would have been happy with that, but that didn't happen. I got a moral victory. Everyone presumed that we're all getting paid some money for all the merchandising. And of course, again, we weren't. Eddie Devereaux, when Ed left Australia and went back to England, Ed was a little disillusioned actor as well. I worked a lot with Ed. We did a couple of films together and did a theatre together. I knew Eddie in London. And he was taken for a little ride as well. So, it was just... But what it did, Luke, it certainly showed management and agents that... when they're drawing a contract up for their actor going into a television series, to make sure very clearly in documents in that contract that any merchandising or resale, replay, anything that the company is like, see, when we did Skippy, there was the only aspect where you could watch the show other than on television was to get certain clips on VHS. Then the show was taken off VHS and re-digitized onto CD, onto DVDs. Then it was Blu-rayed. So, I mean, they were perpetually, you know, regurgitating the show onto new formats. And, of course, making money again. So people were watching our performances again and again, and none of the actors were receiving any kind of remuneration for it. And that's not only here in this country, Luke. It played in 120 countries throughout the world. I mean, it was an unbelievable success right through the British Isles, through Africa, New Zealand. Japan absolutely loved it. It played through America, Europe. So, you know, the company was certainly not short of making money out of the show. You would have thought just out of honorability, they would have cut up a little piece of the action to give to the actors that did the show.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I feel bad that didn't work out because you deserved it. You all did.
Gary, it was a lesson, Luke. I mean, doing the court situation, again, as I just suggested, made all management and agents and actors, representatives aware that once they constructed a contract between the actor and the studio or the network or the production company, that certain clauses were put in there and not just word of mouth. I mean, we had I certainly had word of mouth back in the day when we shot Skippy because I knew all the producers, they were pals of mine. Look, Tony, you know, if the show hits, everyone's going to get a little piece of the action. And of course, that never happened.
Tony Bonner is with me, star of stage and screen. I want to take a break and I want to come back and just pick your brains over this tragedy that's happened in the United States with Alec Baldwin and how the hell a loaded prop gun could be even on a set. I want to ask your opinion on that in a sec. Can we do that?
Yeah, sure.
I got a couple of really, really lovely texts from Chris Waller, the arguably the world's most famous horse trainer after what he did with Winx. Chris, if you're listening, I suspect you are because you let me know that you are a regular listener of The Night Shift, so you've got massive problems, but thank you for listening. I look forward to talking to you on a regular, if we could, basis. I have a lot to learn about the horse racing industry, and if you could educate me, that would be wonderful. And I really do appreciate you ringing into the program yesterday. But with the Melbourne Cup coming up, maybe we can talk about how all that works in a bit more detail. But I know that you listen at this time of the morning. So, Chris, thank you. And you mentioned Nature B. Jeff Cook, the boss of Nature B, who's based in New Zealand, he was telling me that New Zealand horse trainers put pollen in the nose bags of New Zealand racehorses. It's a completely natural food. And there are New Zealand horse trainers. I'll get the whole story from Jeff Cook today, Chris, and I'll let you know. But Cookie was telling me, oh, this was years ago. He said, oh, yeah, New Zealand racehorses, they supplement their feed and they give them pollen because it is a completely all natural food. And it boosts immunity and boosts energy levels. So I'll find out more for you, Chris. But Chris, if you're listening, thank you so much for those very kind text messages. And you and I will stay in touch. And I will put it on your shoulders to educate me as to how, from your side of things, the horse racing industry works, because I'm completely in the dark. 1-3-3-3. But I've never been to a horse meeting in my life except out at Hawkesbury one day. 2GB asked me to go there and sash a winner. It was a race that we were sponsoring. And Jimmy Cassidy was the jockey that day. It was the first time I'd met him. I forget the name of the horse, but that's about it. And when I lived in Bathurst was very much involved in harness racing. But I know nothing about it. So, Chris, you can educate me. Consider me sitting at your feet learning. And I'll find out more about pollen being a feed for New Zealand racehorses, and I'll let you know. 133353, spring is here. Time to get out in the outdoors. Enjoy your garden. By the way, the quickie is coming up in just a sec. Look, if you want to experience the best hose we have ever discovered, this is it. It comes from Aussie Hoses. God, we love ours. 20 metres long, no tangles. It retracts quickly and easy. It is perfect for gardening, perfect for spring cleaning, perfect for washing your car. Right now, Aussie Hoses will deliver and install the auto hose onto any brick wall for only $169. And if you don't have a brick wall, no problem. They also supply and install an optional metal post that goes into the garden bed or into your lawn. Now, the first 20 callers, and there's a phone number coming up, the first 20 callers this morning are going to receive a bonus trigger nozzle with the six spray option. We love this. The auto hose, it comes with a 2-year warranty, 1-300-384-165, and you can secure this fantastic offer delivered to your home and installed. AussieHoses.com.au. The number's coming up. And don't forget to ask them about their easy turn garden taps. They are European made, easy to use, and they deliver up to 50% more water. Your pressure goes up and they do not leak. Usually $2.99 each, but for my listeners, $149 fully installed. But ask them about their hoses. Ask them about the easy turn tap. Here's the number, 1-300-384-165. We have the tap, we have the hoses, and we love them. Changed our lives forever. That number again, 1-300-384-165. The night shift here on Triple M. Okay, the quickie. Now, I'll give you another listen. No one came close yesterday. Here it is. 133353, here it is again. There it is. That is the quickie. I did give away something yesterday. I said it was a band. I'll stick with that. It is a band. Here's the clue. This particular band has a female singer. Here it comes again. What song is that? 133353 is the telephone number. Have a crack.
Around Australia on the Triple M network. This is The Night Shift with Luke Burner. The Night Shift.
Tony Bonner is with me, star of Skippy, star of many films, but one of my favourites is They're a Weird Mob. But Tony, I just...
Luke, you must have liked The Man from Snowy River.
The Man from Snowy River.
And you must have liked The Light Horseman.
I did. I did, Tony. Yeah. I did.
A whole bunch of other stuff in there, Luke.
I know. And I wanted to talk to you about this tragedy that the world's talking about in the United States on the set of this movie, Rust, starring Alec Baldwin, and a cinematographer has been shot dead, a director wounded. Because somebody handed Alec Baldwin a loaded gun on a movie set. Tony, I know you've done a lot of thinking about this. How the hell could this happen?
Well, how could it have happened? The glib and quick answer to that, Luke, is it did happen. Why did it happen, or why should it have happened? Well, it shouldn't have. That's the bottom line. The young girl who was the armorer on the film was too young in respect of her age. She was 24, but she was too young, had not worked in the industry, it seemed, to any great extent, yet was given this position of armorer on a picture. There was trouble in that fact alone, that the young girl just wasn't up to the task. And yeah, she handed a hot gun to an actor on the set that should never have happened, because it doesn't happen. You know, live ammunition should not be on a set. There's no reason for live ammunition to be on a set. I've fired thousands of rounds of pistols, machine guns, Lewis guns, in characters I've played in films, all blanks. They were tested. I've used guns all my life at gun clubs, yep. rifle clubs. So I, you know, have some knowledge of weaponry.
That's why I wanted to ask you. She was a young armourer, but apparently it wasn't her that handed him the gun. It was an assistant director who should know better. He actually used the words "cold gun." It was loaded.
Well, yes, it was, but again, he wasn't to know. It would seem the three handguns, pistols that were to be used in this sequence were on a props table.
On a tray.
That were cleared by the armourer.
You're right.
So when the assistant, young assistant, you know, there's on a film you have the director, then you have the first assistant director, then a second assistant and a third assistant. It wouldn't have been the first assistant director that went to get the props. It would have been the second or third
right.
assistant.
You're right.
And so the kid's gone over to the table and said to the young props girl, hey, babe, here I am. And she would have said, yeah, they're on the table there, Frank or Jimmy, whatever the hell his name was. And he would have picked up the piece that was being used by Baldwin, took it, just carried it. It was lucky he didn't pop it off on the way to Baldwin. He then gave the gun to Baldwin. Baldwin put it in the holster. He was using a cross-handed draw. So he wasn't kind of, he didn't have the holster on the side that he was going to draw the gun from. He had it on the other side. Mm. So he had to stretch across his own abdomen, take the gun out and bring it back. And it was when he was bringing it back that it went off, hit the camera girl and the
cinematographer, yeah.
Yeah, the camera DOP, director of photography, and the director who was sitting next to her. Baldwin wouldn't have known what happened. He took the piece out of his holster and he either pulled the hammer back and it fired. He wouldn't have pulled the trigger because there was no reason for him to pull the trigger. So I kind of think as he's taken the piece out and was carrying and bringing it up towards the camera, he used his thumb and hauled the hammer back, and the hammer's gone and crashed into the cartridge and fired.
If this tragedy happened on an Australian movie set, and you've worked on plenty, what would happen?
Well, blame would be apportioned, and the blame would come to the producer to begin with for having live rounds on a film set. It would come then to either the director or the first assistant to have checked through the armourer that everything was cold, so there was no live ammunition on the set or in any of the pieces. And I suppose, as I've done many times, if I've been given a piece, I've cracked it open to check that.
So,
what was it?
So in your long career, and you've used guns in many movies, when you're handed what's called a cold gun, a prop gun, you've always had a look. You've always checked it yourself, have you?
You bet.
You don't trust the armourer?
Oh, well, it's not so much a sense of trust.
You just double check.
You do it. You just crack the, if it's a handgun, like especially one of these old 44s or 45s, you just break the piece open and there's the barrel, the chambers sitting there, and there's nothing in there. So then you close it up.
It's unbelievable. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens with this. Tony, it's great to talk to you. My grandparents owned a semi-detached house in Bonner Avenue at Queenscliff, named after your...
After my grandfather.
Your grandfather.
He was mayor of Manly at the time, my grandfather, when Bonner Avenue was named. I'd like to be wealthy enough like you, Lukey, to be able to...
Oh, no, it's gone. They sold it long ago. Imagine if I could inherit that.
Oh, man.
Bonner Avenue, it was on the southern side of Bonner Avenue, not the side facing on the beach side, the other side. It was third from the corner, semi-detached.
You could have retired on that.
Oh,
mate.
You're kidding me. But anyway, that's the name, Bonner. And my name is Boner, B-O-N-A, and people often called me Bonner. But your grandfather was a legend. Yes, he was former mayor and founder of Manly Surf Life Saving Club, was he?
Yeah, he was the first president.
Life
Saving Club. I've been president there.
I know.
You know, three times in the last 25 years. I'm a life member there at the club. All's good. Luke, a couple of films I have in the air. I'm directing another play, which I love doing. So, you know, life continues.
Let me know exactly what you're doing and when it's ready for people to come, and I'll plug it here and I'll come along. I'd love to catch up with you again. It's so good to hear your voice.
Anytime, Luke, anytime.
All right. And
thank you, mate.
And as far as that lawsuit, that unsuccessful lawsuit, I have one thing. I have one thing to say.
Yep. Luke. You didn't disappoint me, mate.
have a great day, Tony Bonner.
Good on you, Luke.
Love you,
see
mate.
You, mate.
Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye, boys.